him on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside, safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel. But I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way. But she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry? Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide. 'Cause everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else.
And that was Mark Levy from his album Take Off Your Clothes, singing Homeless Shuffle. The record label New Clear Records. You're listening to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is a weekly Sunday show every week at 11 o'clock. You get to hear about civil rights for the poor, demonstrations on behalf of basic rights for homeless people, police abuse, local issues such as that. We broadcast out of Santa Cruz, but try to cover a broader area. This week, for instance, you'll be hearing excerpts from the San Jose City Council of earlier this month, which passed an anti-homeless, anti-sitting law that goes into effect in about a month. You'll also be hearing from the Palo Alto demonstration against a similar law that passed a month ago up there and provoked quite a reaction. There'll be updates on Santa Barbara, Mountain View, Berkeley, San Francisco, And of course, our own Santa Cruz and the court situation here, where a lot of people are still trying to deal with court cases that came out of the City Hall sleepers protest, a 7.5-month-long vigil in front of City Hall, which attempted to alert the community and the city council to the simple facts of being homeless and the specific reality that there's a law that makes it illegal to sleep or cover up with blankets after 11 in Santa Cruz, and at the same time, there are less than 30 shelter spaces or even legal sleeping spaces for more than 750 people, 750 people without homes in Santa Cruz. This isn't a call-in show. Unfortunately, we don't have a studio to use, or at least I don't have access to a studio. Instead, those who want to broadcast on the station put in loop tapes, and that's what I do, looped as I am. You get to hear an hour and a half of me and stuff I've recorded and comment on coming at you. That's what you're going to be hearing for the next hour and a half if you stay tuned to 96.3 FM. If you have any comments or questions, additions, or deletions that you want to put forward, you can reach me by phone at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the phone number for Robert Norris. That's who I am, Bathrobes Pierre Robert, as I call myself, because of the bathrobe I wear at sleeping band demonstrations. And HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group that is concerned with the civil rights of poor people. If you're interested in any of these things, feel free to leave me a message of any length on my machine at 423-4833 or 423-HUFF. And now let's go to the San Jose City Council meeting of April 8th. At that council meeting, a law was introduced making it illegal to sit or lie down in San Jose within a 66-block area in downtown San Jose. The reason for this being supposedly to protect pedestrians, sitters, and business. The only place it would be legal to sit would be a sidewalk cafe, a public park, or a bus stop. San Jose City Council took testimony for about 40 minutes, and then, after a briefer debate, passed it 9-2. And it came up for a second reading last Tuesday on the 22nd of April, and this time it was not even removed from the consent calendar, and the entire consent calendar was passed unanimously. So that law will go into effect probably by May 22nd or thereabouts, and already protests are gathering around it. For instance, next Tuesday on April 29th, at 11 o'clock, there will be a demonstration going from the Community Homeless Alliance's meeting place on 80 South 5th Street to march down to City Hall or the Fairmont or a downtown hotel to protest and draw strong attention to this very cruel, very discriminatory, and rather, well, very unnecessary law. And you can be there. If you're interested in that demonstration, you can give a call to 345-2353. Leave your name and number, or show up 11 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday at the meeting of the Community Homeless Alliance at First Christian Church. And from there, you'll be able to meander on down to the area where it will be illegal to sit, a no-sitting zone. That means no sitting even at a chair you provide with a table to, let's say, register voters. Interesting interpretation of the Constitution there in San Jose. We'll see how their protest is dealt with by the police. Protest actually won't be illegal for about a month, but after that, you may see some interesting action. And we saw that kind of interesting action in Palo Alto Thursday, a couple days ago. There was a large demonstration there. But first, let's hear from the San Jose City Council and the testimony that happened at the San Jose City Council. The recording is not the best, so stop that talking and listen up.
Scott Richards here, in the Homeless Alliance Ministry. Just today, we're down at the church serving meals to the homeless. And I think everybody here is mindful of the fact that there are people living in third world conditions in the midst of one of the most affluent cities in the United States. There's a growing trend everywhere. San Jose need not be vilified. They're not causing the problem. But what city is addressing the root cause of homelessness? The lack of affordable housing. Cities throughout the nation have criminalized the poor, vilified the poor, tell the poor you're not welcome here, but what city has the moral fortitude to say, you are our brothers and sisters, the homeless are children of God, and you're welcome in the city. We'll do what we can to take you in. We'll open abandoned buildings. We'll consider you one of us, and we'll make this your city too. That's the vision of San Jose that I have. I work in the downtown churches. When the armory closed, we took in 200 people. 200 people. Those people today are living along the river. Those people today are sleeping in front of your businesses. If the city council has the vision of San Jose for the future, what is the future of the poor in San Jose? Is it going to be a city divided? A city where the poor are cast out or embraced? One of us or one of them? That question is incumbent upon you to answer. And those of us who work on the front lines can tell you unequivocally, the problem's not going to go away. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Families with children, working people, housing is the answer, not criminalizing the poor. God bless you.
And that was Scott Wagers of the Community Homeless Alliance, and he's the fellow with others who will be marching downtown on Tuesday to protest San Jose's sitting ban, which not only makes it illegal to sit down in that 66-block area, you can sit in the park, but at dusk, the park's closed. If you do sit down and don't move, you face up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for the first offense. Amazing.
Thank you. I can't fax the modems down. I'm against the sit-down plan. I'm against this, as well as the zoning and amortizing ordinances, which will be discussed next month. It targets the homeless and all others, the some that are not homeless. We like to hang out downtown. I'm downtown a lot myself, and I never see anybody that would want to sit in the doorway or anyplace else. I'm over them all the time. And I never see anybody in the doorways besides going in or out. So it's just another law to target people like us. And I know I would rather have the homeless and the poor and the group home people here than those who disperse them. And what else did I want to say? I'm hoping that this law is not passed for that reason. Thank you.
Let me call out the next batch of cards before you do your remarks, please. Becky Johnson, Satish Wong, Ron Aurora, and Robert Molnick or something like that. Yes, sir. Are those people whose names I just called, please line up here behind Mr. Zane. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Madam Mayor, council members, citizens of San Jose, my name is Robert Norris. I'm from Santa Cruz and have lived in San Jose as well. And I'm a member of an organization called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I also work with the group Food Not Bombs, so that you successfully mediated with several years ago. And I want you to consider that the amount of testimony you hear in the letters, you have a thick packet of letters supporting the ordinance, I don't see a packet of letters opposed, maybe due to the fact that the first I and anyone I've spoken to who opposes this ordinance has heard about it was in the Mercury News on Saturday, consideration you might take into account. What we have here is an ordinance that essentially criminalizes sitting within a 66-block area. So that means that anywhere within that 66 blocks, if an older person wishes to sit down, she or he faces technically the threat of arrest. Now you say, well, there are certainly sidewalk cafes that you can pay. Yes, there are.
Parks.
And there are parks. I don't know how many parks are within this area. Certainly there's one large one. There's also bus stops. But how many seating facilities actually are there within the 66-block area? This, I think, is something you should really look at very specifically. I tried to contact Personal Redevelopment Agency. They referred me to another agency earlier today to find out what the answer to this question was. Apparently they didn't know. And I don't know if the staff that's prepared this ordinance knows either. How many benches are there to sit down? Penalties of up to 6 months in jail. This is a misdemeanor for the first offense. That means jury trials, folks. That means those of us who wish to protest this ordinance, and I will be one of them, will be going through trial and court and tying up your courts around this ordinance on the issue of basic civil rights. What that means also is, consider what this ordinance says. If I'm a petitioner, and I want to set up a table to register voters in this 66-block area, it looks like I'm going to have to go to the city to get a permit to do this. So it seems to me that there are First Amendment problems with this ordinance as well. I can't sit down with a clipboard and register voters on this, in this area, even if I'm not blocking the sidewalk, even if I'm not interfering with business, even if I'm not even sitting near a business window. So there's another problem with the ordinance there. Now, we heard some comments from the merchants, and certainly they should have their say on this, and we should be concerned about the business health of the city. But we must not mistake exaggeration for fact. All-day loitering may indeed be happening in some cases. This ordinance does not ban all-day loitering. It bans sitting down more than once you're warm. That's the fact and the clear words of the ordinance. I want to commend the staff for actually acknowledging that this ordinance isn't simply concerned with tripping and falling. Well, that's one of the specious rationalizations that's presented. I sat through a ludicrous session in Palo Alto where the police could not give you one instance of anybody who had tripped or fallen, not one claim against the city, and yet that was the whole basis on which this ordinance was being put forward, because they didn't want to use the word panhandle because of the First Amendment problems they thought they had with that. We must be honest in these discussions with each other. We're all concerned about the civil code of behavior downtown. A civil code of behavior downtown, however, does not mean jailing people who sit down if they have no other place to sit. I have a flyer here for you, which I wrote when I went to Palo Alto and discussed a similar issue, though there the issue was much more limited. There's only a 10-block area they were considering. I'm going to give it to you for your consideration. Also, I want to point out that blocking the sidewalk is already a crime. Urinating is already a crime. And if the merchants who are protesting so loudly against this problem were really concerned, I would think they would get together and open some 24-hour bathrooms, which I understand are not open here in San Jose. I know this is a problem. I know that bathrooms get vandalized. But we're a civilized city. This is certainly something Europe has done. We can do it as well. We're almost finished. Almost finished. We're the residents of San Jose Consulting. You're going to drive homeless people away from the downtown. Where do you think they're going to go? Are they going to disappear? We know that. So I suggest what you need to do is follow one of the alternatives that may have been suggested in the staff report, which is to send this ordinance back to re-examine it for First Amendment problems, to determine if there are a sufficient number of benches, to consult with the residents, get together with homeless advocates as well. You can come up with something better. I have confidence in you. Thank you.
My name is Robert Molino. I represent the community homeless lines ministry. It's hard not to start to elaborate on anything he said because he said everything. The business district has some good points, like the gentleman who owns the taqueria, and he said that he would be willing to allow homeless to work, pick up papers or whatever. that kind of compassion, and even furthermore, more compassion is needed because the business district, they say that it's a problem that the homeless are loitering in the downtown area, but the actual problem, again, is affordable housing, lack of affordable housing. These people would not be on our sidewalks if they had somewhere else to go.
if there were alternatives. George Travis Center is not the only place around that has any sort of day program where people can go and get the training or motivation or whatever you want to call it to move out of their condition. If there were some kind of a companion action on the part of the council, I would feel much more positive about it, that if people were offered a genuine alternative, that's my concern. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hello, Madam Mayor, council members. My name is Becky Johnson. In Palo Alto, recently we heard testimony from the police and city bureaucrats documenting the safety hazard presented by people sitting or lying on sidewalks and causing congestion to occur on the sidewalks. I have a much more practical suggestion with alleviating this common complaint of too many people in the downtown area. One, we have too many shoppers. Now, I've devised a plan to deal with that. We can have people whose last names begin with A, letter A through J, can shop on even calendar days, and K through Z on odd calendar days. This would significantly reduce the congestion on the sidewalks. Second, we need to ban Christmas. Christmas draws way too many people to the downtown area, posing a public haste, public safety hazard, and council members should be very concerned about this. And three, in testimony we heard that in Palo Alto, the seven people who fell down or injured themselves on the sidewalks in calendar year 1996, five were over 70. Obviously, people over 70 pose a health and safety hazard and should be banned from the downtown area. So to recap, shop only on odd and even calendar days, ban Christmas, and ban people over 70. Because, of course, this ordinance is definitely not an anti-homeless law. Remember, safety first.
I would like to do this right now because I work at the social services at least five times, 5 days out of the month. And last month I calculated 2,958,831 people have become homeless in the San Jose area. I also like to say that 7,000 a week we have looking for a job, especially in the San Jose area. I would like to also say that the homeless people are growing every single day. And it's true, we do hang around the streets because we have no place else to go. There is less and less food served to us every night, especially at the some of the places. I think there's only two places that we can eat at, and the portions are very, very small. It can only maybe, I'm not even full because I am still hungry. This is getting to be ridiculous because this is really called starving the homeless people. We do not get but maybe a very small check during the month, and we are lucky enough to get something to drink with this check. And I like to say that I have been a victim ever since I became homeless. I do have a small room, believe it or not, off the streets, and I've only been off the streets for 3 months. I am very thankful, but we have problems with prostitution there. We have problems with abuse, alcohol, and also we have the problem with abuse of drugs. And this causes people to steal our food from our own little rooms. And I also like to say that we don't even have that much money to furnish ourselves the toilet tissue. And this also disappears continuously because these people have to support their own drug support and alcohol support. And I would like to say that, you know, I went to Santa Cruz their town is really worse off than our town. They have a lot more homeless people, and believe it or not, they are taken care of a lot better than here in San Jose. I really wanted to let you know this because I know the man who was talking up here is from Santa Cruz, and I know a lot of people in the area. I do a lot of talking to homeless people because that has been my job in the last 3 years since I have been in and out of being homelessness.
And that inevitable voice interrupting the San Jose City Council of April 8th's public comment section was Mayor Susan Hammer, who apparently had no interest whatsoever, or very little, in hearing this testimony, and was going through her pro forma motions. At least that was my interpretation. Kind of call her the Iron Woman of San Jose. Hammerhead Hammer, as we used to refer to her in the demonstrations we had 3 or 4 years ago. And she was equally resistant to any kind of acknowledgement of police abuse, provision of services for homeless people when the Winter Armory shelter was closing, and so forth. Well, if you want to be a part of the demonstration that's going to be happening on Tuesday, April 29th, you can show up, as I said, at 80 South 1st Street. Make that 80 South 5th Street. That's First Christian Church at 11 a.m. And they're going to be marching downtown to spread the word that sitting down is not a crime. As we said in Palo Alto, hey, hey, ho, ho, sit, lie, law has got to go. Join them or give them a call to show your support at 345-2353. That's the Community Homeless Alliance. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Unfortunately, there are no call-ins to this show. We're still a station without a home. We're going to do the court update next, but before we do, here's a reminder of who heads the highest court in our country.
Sitting on the highest bench in the land is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist, rendering opinions when our liberty takes the stand with the gavel of truth in his clenched fist. Housing discrimination was declared illegal, but William can't sell his to Mr. Brown or Mr. Siegel. Well, it might ruffle the feathers of the American eagle, says the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Interpreting the highest law of our nation is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Affirmative action is reverse discrimination, says our new Chief Justice. Case dismissed. Constitutional intent is what he means to say, lest our founding framing fathers should roll over in their graves, for never in their wildest dreams would they have freed their slaves, says the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Presiding over cases which will set a precedent is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Fondling his gavel as he makes his argument, ruling who and what and where can be kissed. Homosexuality is anti-family, and all the other judges are inclined to agree. Rather than flunk jury Falwell's test of morality, grins the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Now the Right Reverend Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Reaching from his chamber, it's a sin to abort with a flick of his judicially bent wrist. Women look better in the family way. Barefoot and pregnant is what we used to say. It'll never be the same if they pass the ERA, quote the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Seat to make the composition of the court more complete. And Mr. Meese will serve them up the Bill of Rights to eat for the honorable just us. We're your fathers, trust us, Billy, you disgust us, Rehnquist.
And that song's a hoot, again from Mark Levy's album Take Off Your Clothes, back in the mid-80s when Reagan was president and Meese was attorney general and the Supreme Court was a little different, but not that much different. And things may not have gotten that much better. In fact, they seem to have gotten a lot worse for welfare recipients. Anyway, in Santa Cruz, we have police problems of our own. I wish I had a tape to play you of last Tuesday's Santa Cruz City Council meeting, at which the Santa Cruz City Council turned down the proposal of their own Citizens Police Review Board to uphold the police chief's plan, which drove me into tearing out my hair. The details of that situation I may be able to get for you a week from today in terms of actual footage, or I should say audio footage of that. The problem of police abuse is happening everywhere. In our own town, Police Chief Steve Belcher unilaterally in the summer of 1995 was found to be ignoring complaints, or should we say, ignoring the law and not passing on complaints to the Citizens Police Review Board as provided by the law and as itemized by his own department code, his General Order C-7. And rather than apologize, admit he was making some mistakes, explain what the problem was, and so forth, he simply went and changed his department's written law to conform with his practice, which had been violating the Santa Cruz City Council's enabling law for the Citizens Police Review Board. The review board law says all complaints shall be forwarded to the Citizens Police Review Board from the police department for review by citizens who are not a part of the police, and so it's presumably, although not usually in fact, have some kind of independence. And what Chief Belcher's department did at his direction and with his knowledge and consent was they kept a whole category of complaints away from the Citizens Police Review Board called inquiries, and this was in direct violation of their departmental order C-7, which stated that inquiries were a subsection of complaints. And it's all in black and white, and anybody who wants to go and look at the department order can see that. So what did Belcher do? That's the name of our police chief, Steve Belcher. He went and changed his own departmental order unilaterally without consulting with the city council, without consulting with the Citizens Police Review Board, and made it his own policy that inquiries were no longer a subsection of complaints, and so he didn't have to forward them by the city law to the Citizens Police Review Board. So if you went in and said, gosh, you know, I don't like what this officer did, and that the police chief decided that was not really a complaint, unless you specified real clearly that it was a complaint, even though it clearly would be a complaint to anyone looking on, he could classify it, and did, as an inquiry, and it didn't get any Citizens Police Review Board, and was simply swallowed up in the bowels of his own Internal Affairs Committee, and who knows where that would lead. In fact, the Internal Affairs Committee has a different standard of proof than the Citizens Police Review Board in order to prove your complaint before the Internal Affairs Department of the Santa Cruz Police Department. You need to show clear and convincing proof, enough almost to send a case to the DA for prosecution, whereas in the Citizens Police Review Board, you only need to show a preponderance of the evidence, that 51% of the evidence shows there's been some abuse. You don't have to, you know, be a Florida attorney or a New York shyster to get your case heard and acknowledged. So Belcher violated the law, and instead of acknowledging that his department had made some mistakes, he then went and unilaterally changed the law without even going to the city council. And what happened on Tuesday night was the Santa Cruz City Council upheld, actually it ignored the issue whether Belcher had violated the previous law. It simply said his new law was fine, which said that he could bury inquiries, things called inquiries that were complaints, at will. This was over the objections of the Citizens Police Review Board. And this whole thing was spearheaded by City Council member Michael Hernandez, who was, of course, the police mole on the Citizens Police Review Board when he was on the board, and then when he was elected to the City Council, he became, again, the policeman's pal on the City Council. He and Scott Kennedy pushed this sucker through, and actually I think it got a 5-2 or a 4-2 vote since the one council member wasn't around. Celia Scott and Catherine Byers dissenting. They wanted the police review board, they wanted the minor offenses not to be called inquiries. They were going to allow the police chief to bury inquiries, but they wanted the category defined more carefully so that a, quote, minor offense could not be simply stuck into the inquiry category and thus never reach the Citizens Police Review Board because it was called an inquiry and not a complaint. The whole issue really is kind of academic because the Citizens Police Review Board doesn't hold public hearings, has no real independence at all, holds homeless people in some contempt. They haven't upheld one homeless complaint last year, according to their staff member, Gary Yamane, and they're getting less and less complaints because people don't trust them. The black community has no confidence in them. I don't know if one Hispanic person has filed a complaint with them. It's a real farce. And, of course, what we need are massive demonstrations and some kind of alternate exposure of these examples of police abuse. Well, in San Francisco, there's a similar controversy brewing, and we turn to an anti-police violence activist, Keith McHenry, who also works with Food Not Bombs up there, to describe and discuss this. This is an April 9th interview. Well, we're on the line with Food Not Bombs activist, Keith McHenry. Hey, Keith.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. So you're involved in organizing against police violence. Last time we talked to you, you had been in and out of police commission meetings dealing with the cover-up of the Aaron Williams case, I should say the Mark Andaya culpability in the Aaron Williams death of 1995. Apparently, Officer Andaya is still skating around, or he's been suspended. What's his story?
Okay, on the 12th of May, he will be back on duty with an semi-automatic pistol in plain clothes in our community, and this is a concern to the community because he's killed two African American people so far.
Who are those people?
One was Aaron Williams in June of '95, and then also a Jerry Stiltz over in Oakland in '84, and this has become a crisis point. It's the ruling class in San Francisco is trying to contain it as a problem of the Aaron Williams case and the AIDS benefit raid.
Benefit raid happened what, New Year's Eve a year ago? Or?
Correct, right.
And that's where numerous people were roughed up.
Right, and one of the guys, Haggett, was an officer who was suspended for 90 days. It was his fourth 90-day suspension. And he's also under investigation for the shooting death. He pumped three bullets into a man, Edwin Sheen, at the corner of Golden Gate and Hyde.
This is Officer Haggett?
Yeah, Officer Haggett. He's got a history of really bad history of violence, but he's like part of this cadre of the Police Officers Association that's kind of running San Francisco, unfortunately.
So the new regime under Police Chief Lau and Mayor Whitewash Willie Brown isn't actually in control?
Oh, definitely not. The POA is in downtown business are running things, and Brown and his people are doing just like what Art Agnes had done back in '88. The police makes a decision, and then the mayor's office pretends like they are the ones that made that decision. It's more important to give the impression of...
Give us some examples of how that has happened historically and recently.
Well, for instance, the Art Agnos, for instance, was in Hawaii, and then the...
You're talking about Mayor Agnos, who was mayor actually before Mayor Jordan, 1988 to 1992?
Yeah, this is just one brief example. He was in Hawaii, and Officer Lieutenant Dick Holder of the San Francisco Police ordered Food Not Bombs arrest, and... on August 15, 1988, and 45 riot police were used to arrest nine people for sharing food and what became the first food arrest in San Francisco.
And eventually after that, you have had more than 1,000 arrests, right?
Right. Now there's been 1,000 arrests. Those are the first nine arrests. And what had happened was then the mayor gets back to the city and this event is occurring, and he then has to stand up for the police. And you could see in his public statements that he... was unclear what the whole reason why the police were so heavy-handed in attacking us, and he had to get up to speed, and then essentially be an apologist for the police. And it was a thing that was run by the police and wasn't run by the mayor's office.
Wasn't there actually an incident?
Caught off guard. And it was done to embarrass the mayor into a position of being compliant with the, the police and downtown business were fearful Art Agnos would be a liberal and threaten the power of downtown business. Really is what went down with that. Now, in this case, Brown is smarter than Pardagnos, the former mayor. But Willie Brown, the current mayor of San Francisco, also has to dance the tune of the San Francisco Police Department. And really, I think people will all think back to Milken Moscone, and that's really what is the is that threat. That actual thing that happened.
You're talking about the assassination of Mayor Moscone
by Dan White,
and Supervisor Milk in the mid 70s, right?
Correct, and that's still in force here. That's
by a police officer, Officer Dan White.
Dan White, correct, and he got 7 years for killing the police commission. I mean, for killing a San Francisco Board of Supervisor official, and you know, two elected officials. They killed two of them, and he got 7 years for assassinating the mayor and the supervisor.
And then they killed himself, right?
That's what people say. There's no evidence of that. No one really knows. And there's like always been this idea that White just has a change of identity and he's part of just doing something different.
Really?
Yeah, that's the main theory I think that I hear usually amongst the people in San Francisco. Of course, there was the White Knight riot, when the verdict was announced, and the famous Twinkie defense, he ate too many Twinkies, that's why he had to pop off the mayor and so on. But I had a friend that was a clerk in the sheriff's department and was shocked to see before Milk and Moscone were killed that they were selling free Dan White T-shirts.
Really?
At 850 Bryan Street.
You must be kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Wow.
I've heard that from a couple of people that were working on staff in the sheriff's department at the time. And
well, maybe they were just prescient.
Yeah, somehow they knew in advance.
Maybe they consulted the astrologer, Ronald Reagan's astrologer.
Right. So anyway, though, that energy is what is driving politics in the police trip that's going on now. So what's happened is that there's supposed to be a lot of reform happening in the San Francisco Police Department.
Indeed, we've heard that the police commission has been revamped.
Right. A bunch of commissioners quit. Now they're having trouble getting some new commissioners, but they got a new president who is a former activist, Pat Norman, who is the president of the police commission.
Is there going to be any changes with her present?
No. We can tell that nothing is going to change. That civilian control does not exist.
Now, are you saying that it sounds almost like a dogma you're repeating? What evidence do you have from, let's say, Norman's past record that there will not be a change of attitude and policy?
Well, this is, I think we can see it a lot. I have two really concrete forms of evidence. And the first concrete form of evidence is the Mumia Abu-Jamal protest on the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., which was April 4th.
You mean this April 4th?
This past April 4th, 1997, with Pat Norman as the current and acting president of the police commission.
And what happened to that protest?
And it was the same stuff as it always happens. We were pressed up against walls on a couple of times with riot police who wouldn't let us proceed with the march. It was a peaceful march, about 150 to 200 people. At the height, maybe it was like around 300 people. It certainly couldn't fit on tiny little sidewalks that they were trying to force us on in the Tenderloin. They wouldn't let us into the Tenderloin. We were sealed off immediately within a few minutes of getting the march starting. People were clubbed right at the beginning of the march.
How many people were clubbed? How many people were clubbed?
Oh, in the final analysis, it's dozens of people ultimately clubbed.
Because the news media reported here that there were, quote, no arrests. So.
There were no arrests, but it was a pretty frightening thing. What happened is, we stayed on the sidewalks. We were, like, attacked at all times, so there's no way you could even get off the sidewalks into the street. Finally, when the protest, and we had, you know, it's pretty difficult marching with cars in the middle of the protest and stuff, no way to, you know, you can't really go in a protest. It's, like, really not it's outrageous that there should be this heavy police presence and this heavy police violence.
How many police officers were involved in this, in monitoring or...
There's about maybe 15 to 20 patrol cars, maybe a little more, a few paddy wagons. The paddy wagons, then they had like maybe 15, 20 guys on bicycles, another 15 or 20 people on motorcycles, and then a riot tactical police squad. Mayor had been Maravich was sort of directing people, as Maravich is famous for being the person on the Michelle Shock tape, choking Michelle Shock on the album. Maravich also is famous for being, he is supposed to be an undercover cop that knows all about everything, and claimed I was paid by the Soviet Union to organize these demonstrations.
You mean you were paid by the Soviet Union, say, 7 years ago before they dissolved to organize demonstrations now, or?
Well, he made that mention at a Duluth Horta. I mean, the Soviet Union was still barely hanging on at the time.
Oh, 1988.
Okay. That he had been an undercover cop investigating me and knew I was financed by the Soviet Union.
Hey, I never realized that, Keith.
That would be a fantastic thing. They had a few dollars. Holder, Officer Holder, who's the commander of the San Francisco Police Department, pinned me up against the cars on two occasions using his unmarked police vehicle.
He did this personally?
Yeah.
Is this just sort of a special attraction that he has for you?
Yeah. Well, he was the first person to arrest me in San Francisco, and he was directing the arrest at Golden Gate Park.
So it's sort of a historical tradition.
Right, and he's traditionally been the head of the Special Operations, which is the Red Squad here. And he was monitoring the events pretty carefully and trying to pin me up against cars twice with his vehicle.
Right.
Cars as a weapon. We were then on Valencia Street, and around Valencia Gardens, we finally took the street again, and there was like all this construction and stuff. There's no way to walk on this little...
Now, the march began where and went to where?
Well, Talon Market was going to go ultimately 16th and Mission.
And so about halfway down at Valencia Street, you were able to take to the street again?
Yeah, we're finally back on the street again, but they were, like, clubbing us and stuff, or, like, riding their motorcycles at that point into us, and their bicycles and stuff, and trying to force us back onto... They would periodically, like, try to force us back onto the sidewalk, and then we'd be on the sidewalk. It was a pathetic event because, you know, it's like 150 people on this tiny little sidewalk trying to hold signs and banners and march. Is ridiculous, and there was no traffic really to speak of on Valencia.
Now, was anybody videoing this whole thing?
I was audio taping it. There were our like commercials, you know, the Channel 4 and Channel 2 and all that videotaped it.
Did any of the police misconduct get out on the national media? Or they?
No way. And in fact, while their Channel 4 is showing an image of this officer swinging his club over his head, smashing this woman. Who's holding a banner, to get the banner from her, and really violently. Well, anyway, I should kind of do the story in chronology. We get to the police station at Mission Station, and they have maybe 20, 30 riders surrounding the station with long batons and their helmets and everything. And then more cops are joining the demonstration at this point. And then we get down to about 21st, so that the police station at 17th in Valencia. We were going to backtrack over to the bar station so people could get away, but they wouldn't let us go that direction, and they forced us up against the wall up on 21st in Valencia and surrounded the whole march, and everyone was under arrest. And then eventually, Roy LaRiva from National People's Congress, or whatever it is they are, from that National People's Campaign, who had the sound permit and who had made the arrangements for the march route with the police, started pleading with the police to let people go. And they said, no, they were in charge, and I have really intense audio tape of all this. And they were starting, that's where they club people bad, and,
What was the provocation for clubbing the people?
They were saying that the march was over, and that they were in charge, and the demonstration was over, and that we were being arrested. And that the fact that people were trying to continue to walk down the streets, and at this point, we're near this place called Pub Cafe, which is where a lot of activists hang out and stuff on Valencia. And so people were coming out of the cafe and watching this, and we're trying to just... And so they were starting to round up people that were just, like, people on the street that weren't even at the protest and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all pinned into this wall, and eventually Gloria Oliva makes an agreement with the commanding officer that they spread this out 5x5, but we have to leave the area. So they let us let the first five out. I'm in the first five, and I went and over by Club Cafe and talked to some friends of mine. Then they announced they would not let any more people out unless I left the area. But I went into the people like shuttled me into Club Cafe, and a bunch of people started going into Club Cafe because the riot police started going towards us. We get into Club Cafe and there's a bunch of people in there, and they tell us that we can't come out of the club no matter what, and they put riot police in front of the front door and a club entrance.
thrust their batons at them and hit them so they, you know, it was clear you weren't going to go out there.
Club, that club cafe.
A bunch of us are in there. Then they drove people off down the street. They divided the whole group up, and they had riots pushing people north and south on Valencia. And I'm trying to break up any groups of people that would gather. They would go in and start using their batons against them, not over their heads, but at waist level into the people's sides and stuff.
And this again was on what date?
That's on April 4th.
Did the alternate media, the alternate news weeklies, cover this in any detail?
Well, we won't know until today.
Oh,
really.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, I haven't gone outside yet, so I don't know. But then the next thing that happened was then we had the national, the San Francisco conference to organize the National No Police Fatality Day on October 22nd, and that was very successful. Quite a few people came, and there was a lot of really animated and open debate about strategies and so on. And I thought that went really well. And then that was on Sunday at
This conference happened this last weekend, or?
It happened Sunday at 5:09
hours. I see.
And that was an all-day event. And then there was a vigil from Mark Garcia, who was killed by San Francisco police at the exact time and location that he was killed, the anniversary of his pepper spraying death on Cesar Chavez and South Van Ness. So we had a pretty big memorial service there that made a lot of media, actually. And then the next morning there is the spin control on KQED radio, Michael Krasny's show, which was interesting, where he had the head of the Office of Citizen Complaint, the head of the Police Commission, the head of the Police Department, or Deputy Chief Saunders, and the head of the President of the Patrol Officers Association, all totally trying to put this spin that the departments are fantastic. There's a couple of, 1% of the officers are bad, but otherwise it's not, it's a really, it's the most progressive, best organized, most humanitarian department in America.
This is on Monday morning or Tuesday morning?
This is Monday morning on KQED 4.
Did you call in and make a comment of your own?
I was able to get in, which is unusual, and be able to speak. And so I said I did not think that was true. That, first of all, that the history of police violence in San Francisco does not start with the AIDS benefit, which is the new story, is it starts with the AIDS benefit.
Mm-hmm.
That all police crises and everything about the police starts with that benefit and moves to the present as opposed to there being any past. And then that's in all the Chronicle stories, Examiner stories, the radio. That's the way it's all presented now. That's the official position, is that there's only two cases of police wrongdoing in San Francisco history. Those two cases would be the AIDS benefit and the Aaron Williams case, and it's not clear that those cases are even all that bad anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially the official line that these people had.
Did you present your theory on KQED that there has been no significant reform in the police commission or the police department, or that the policies are controlled by middle echelon people like Holder?
Well, this is exactly what I said. I said, in my experience, it was not an issue of some rogue cops causing trouble, that it was the department was organized to suppress people's rights, and as an example, I described briefly the march that had happened the Friday, and that the idea was to build community trust, because that's what they kept all saying, that doesn't seem like a very good way to build community trust, is to violently suppress a demonstration.
Are demonstrators complaining to the OCC or the police commission about the behavior of officers during that march?
Well, we're hoping so, that people will come out tonight at Wednesday night at the police commission meeting and denounce that, although there's some frustration with that, because the fact that we were not arrested and that we were let out 5 by 5 was a good strategy by the department, because it's given this impression that this is the new reformed police department, because now, even though they do stop the protests from happening and they do surround everybody and physically control them and force them to end their demonstrations against their will, that the fact that the people were not arrested is somehow this mark of
Are they? You say that dozens of people were clubbed?
I would say that I have heard a number. I saw maybe 6 people, including myself, clubbed at my end of the protest where I was standing.
Are those 6 people and any others that you may have seen going to come to the police commission?
Well, we've been trying to get them to come, but there's been some problems about that, and part of it is that problem of some of the people thinking, well, maybe because it was we weren't arrested, that it was not so bad, that we were only detained instead of arrested.
So there's sort of a division.
Somehow an improvement. clubbed. And there's some people that are saying that this is actually somehow an improvement.
Hang on a second, Gene.
Even though these were people that were clubbed.
I hear you. Just a minute. So, Keith, for those who are supporting a reform of police policies, what numbers do you have? What suggestions? What meetings? What's happening?
Well, the basic thing I think people should realize that there isn't any reform, that the the whole attitude of Pat Norman and of Mary Dunlap and stuff is one that the system is really working now, that everything's going really well.
Who is Dunlap?
Dunlap would be the president, the director of the Office of Citizen Complaint. And I was interviewed by their investigators twice, and I was actually questioned about my political affiliations and how the demonstrations were organized and who was in charge and did I have any role.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I ended up getting questioned about. But then when I brought a complaint against the police for using the, this heavy-duty tactic of bringing community organization called Residents Against Drugs to a homeless rights meeting that was held in Golden Gate Park, and this gang intimidated the homeless people who were trying to make decisions about organizing resistance against the police sweeps in Golden Gate Park. So instead of them, they ridiculed me during the investigation, the people from the OCC. So I mentioned that I didn't have faith in the Office of Citizen Complaint and so on, and then all over the air, these people, like, one by one denounced me, going, McHenry's fire and crazy, and Saunders was kind of shocking. He's been held up as being a very positive and progressive force in the department, said that he had attended the demonstration, and the demonstration I described was different than the demonstration he was watching, essentially saying I was a liar. But I have it on audio tape, and it's very heavy duty what really went down compared to what Chief Saunders is claiming went down, or one other problem could be that Chief Saunders thinks that the police having the right to stop any protest from going forward is somehow a way of building trust in the community. Maybe.
So when will this tape be aired? Is this going to go on San Francisco Liberation Radio?
My personal tape that I took of the action has already been playing on San Francisco Liberation Radio, and actually we've made made a special little show, like a skit out of it.
Maybe you can send us a copy of that, Keith.
Yeah, we'll try to get you a copy.
We'll play it down here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. One last question, since I know you've got to go. You said there was a meeting of organizing resistance by homeless people to the sweeps in the park under the Matrix, but we don't call it Matrix program, of not Jordan, but now Willie Brown.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that meeting, what happened, and is there any organizing going on? Do you have any numbers for us?
Well, it's apparently, according to the Coalition on Homelessness, over twice as many citations and arrests for homeless people as under the Jordan administration during the same period of time. It's also, that meeting kind of fizzled because of the tension of this gang.
So when was this last meeting? What's the name of the organization?
That was like, 5 months ago, four months.
So the organization has sort of dissolved since then?
Matt Holt, because of the suppression and everything, nothing got going.
I see.
And there isn't anything going around organizing against the attacks on the homeless, which is very frustrating. And a part of it is that there's always about to be these deals with Brown, but that's not going anywhere. And there's a lot of the community activists that are tied to Brown are like trying to put the skids on any kind of resistance to Brown's administration, which was a very frustrating experience.
So again, it's the old story of once the Democrats get in power, the opposition that was at least vocal, if ineffective, even loses its voice because they are now in collusion with the Democrats. And
that's the kind of what's going on. It's very frustrating. Now the other thing though is that the. I think that listeners down there should be aware of is that the end of the KQED forum program, Pat Norman talks about how there's all this moving all these equipment out to Hunter's Point, to this new facility that's being the new police facility out there. And actually it turns out some police are complaining that the radiation that is there has caused them health problems, you know. It's a very radioactive...
What do we need to know about that?
So what's gone on, though, the very final comments of the new president of the San Francisco Police Commission is about helicopters and the other crowd control equipment that is other equipment, including the three armored personnel carriers, and they're going to be unveiled and used in a strategy of using this new equipment as opposed to...
be the next kind of thing that we're going to see. So as it turns out, for Northern California, including Santa Cruz County, the federal task force on counterterrorism task force is in place. $2 million have been allocated for paid informants. INS is very heavily involved, and an unknown number of INS officers are involved. 9 Federal Bureau of Investigation officers are coordinating this task force. Helicopters and armored personnel carriers have been issued to the San Francisco Police Department, and apparently there's a plan to start using this equipment in the Mission District.
How do you know that the Santa Cruz County is a part of this?
Well, it's supposed to, that's one of the...
Our police chief, Steve Belcher, has assured us that his group is not a part of this terrorism task force.
Well, it may be, like we got the same story up here, the San Francisco police aren't supposed to be involved in it either. But it does cover Northern California, and it is based in San Francisco, and I would be shocked if Santa Cruz is not considered part of Northern California.
Because I know we were concerned about the terrorism bill federally, which, essentially targets anybody who gives humanitarian aid, even to a group that has been designated as terrorist.
Yeah, well, my understanding of what I'm seeing personally with my own eyes is that there is a very important effort to suppress people's civil liberties in Northern California.
But not along the lines of, let's say, using court action or executive action as you feared would be happening once Clinton's terrorism bill passed.
Oh, that could definitely happen. That hadn't necessarily happened yet, but that's what they're talking about now.
Who's talking about it?
I mean, that's what the media has been saying about the counterterrorism task force.
Well, I know, as I told you yesterday, we have had 3 visits from the FBI against nonviolent activists connected with the City Hall sleepers protest. Kitten Reynolds, Linda LeMaster, and Jim Costner. FBI agents have been interrogating them about claims that they are part of a militia or part of a plot to blow up a federal building or storing bombs or running guns or whatever. But wholly off-base charges that have nothing to do with what these people do or what these organizations do. It's kind of spooky that the FBI could be so loony as to believe these or to pursue these kinds of leads down here.
Well, the San Francisco, Food Not Bombs in Pomona, Food Not Bombs, Fort Worth, Texas, Food Not Bombs, San Francisco, Food Not Bombs, and a number of other Food Not Bombs chapters have been harassed by federal protective services, although on a couple of occasions it was the FBI. Like, for instance, all of Fort Worth Food Not Bombs equipment was seized by the FBI after the Oklahoma bombing, in conjunction with the Oklahoma bombing investigation.
They seized their cooking equipment?
They seized their cooking.
And that was the ever-informative anti-police violence activist Keith McHenry, also a Food Not Bombs worker, last April 9th, talking to us on the phone. Next, again, let's go back to Santa Cruz, closer to home. We have an interview with a local homeless activist who's actually homeless. Unlike myself, I live in a room, but I'm concerned with civil rights issues and talk about them a lot. She lives in her van and on the streets and in shelters and wherever she can, and has been homeless for some time. And she has a particular perspective on the Downtown Association's new Real Change, Not Spare Change program, as they call it, the attempt to encourage people not to give money to panhandlers on Pacific Avenue. And here's Laura Tucker. Laura's been kind of an acute observer of the local homeless scene, as well as running through all the homeless numbers herself. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
And you've been kind of watching this new campaign by the merchants, Real Change, Not Spare Change, an attempt to deter people from being compassionate on the mall and giving out any money whatsoever, in an attempt to, should we say, assist the downtown merchants in sweeping away the homeless.
That is not part of their central purpose. It is just a byproduct. The reason I'm bringing this up is that I see a gradual change in the way things are being done in our society. The police have often told me when I've been stopped for a traffic violation or something like that, well, we don't make the laws, we just enforce them. But I see a very heavy legal police presence in determining what safety is here and what is a suitable law for obstruction of the people. And I feel it is just a byproduct. The reason I'm bringing this up is that I see a gradual change in the way things are being done in our society. The police have often told me when I've been stopped for a traffic violation or something like that, well, we don't make the laws, we just enforce them. But I see a very heavy legal police presence in determining what safety is here and what is a suitable law for obstruction of the people. And I feel it's part of a new world order to have this police here. And I would please want you to just not vote for this.
Hi, y'all. My name is Michael Mahan. Some of you know me, some of you don't. These two police officers here know me from living on the street. Hi, Sandra. Hi, Derek. I'm against your ordinance. I'm a veteran. I'm homeless. If I don't have any money to eat, no money to wash my clothes, I'm going to fly my sign saying, I need some work, you know, or I need some help. If y'all ain't going to help us, who is? How would you like us to pass a law that says you can't drive your BMW or your Mercedes down University Avenue on certain hours of the day? Huh? That's all I got to say. Thank y'all very much.
Good evening. I'm Herb Block, 2731 Byron Street. Ron, that was the most concise I ever was. Thank you, Vice Mayor Anderson. The council has given the city attorney a very difficult job to do. The city attorney has an ethical and professional responsibility to try to implement the policy decisions that you make, and you have asked him to prepare this draft ordinance. And the difficulty is that he's had to, in order to implement the direction of the council, he's had to ignore the remarks in the record of your meeting of July 8th, 1996, at pages 79-390 and 391 of Councilmember McCown, where she pointed out that there was a lack of evidence and facts in the record. And those of us who attended the last meeting on January 21st, 1997, also notice a lack of evidence and facts supporting this proposal. Councilmember McCown's remarks are important because they appear in the record after the remarks of Chief Durkin, which the city attorney has relied upon as evidence supporting the draft ordinance. This particular proposal is related to the kinds of decisions the council usually makes, which are decisions on land use. The city council over the years, in decades in fact, has chosen a strategy of urban development in our business districts. And while we're pursuing that type of development, some people would like us in those business districts to have the people who are in the districts look like the people look on the business district of Los Altos. That's not going to happen with this development strategy. As you've found in a number of situations, both with this ordinance and with the situations of parking in residential neighborhoods surrounding the University Avenue Business District and the California Avenue Business District, there is a price to pay for this kind of development strategy. And there just isn't enough money around in the city to alleviate these symptoms by having this strategy throughout the city. Yet, unfortunately, that seems to be the policy you'd be heading towards if you take a look at the draft comprehensive plan that will be coming before you shortly. The intent is to intensify development in the commercial areas of primarily three areas in South Palo Alto by giving them a fancy name called Urban Village. But if you analyze those situations, essentially you're going to start running into the same problems. The problems of parking will be immediate, but the kinds of problems that you're facing this evening, you're going to be your successors down the road will be facing in these other areas if you follow that policy. You're going to have to find solutions to the problems of living in an urban area that have starting to crop up in University Avenue and will probably be down the road not too far in California Avenue before you try to implement the same kinds of policies in other parts of Palo Alto. The direction that you've given the city attorney is to create an ordinance which is essentially against a particular group of people, and that's why you have an ordinance against sitting and lying on the sidewalk rather than against the people who do most of the obstruction of pedestrian traffic in Palo Alto on University Avenue, which are large crowds waiting to get into popular restaurants, or people walking in one direction of the sidewalk who believe their entire group is entitled to the entire sidewalk regardless of who it is that's walking in the opposite direction. It seems to me that the comments of Vice Mayor Anderson and of Councilmember McCown in the meeting of July 8, 1996 are both well taken. It's inappropriate and unconstitutional, and also there are no facts or evidence to support this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roth. Lisa Rita, to be followed by Jules Scott.
Good evening. My name is Perugio Bluda. I live on Upper Page Mill Road in Palo Alto. I'm pleased to be a member of a small collective called Food Not Bombs that has been serving free vegan meals twice a week here for a year and a quarter. I bring that up largely to tell you that I am out there on the street a lot, and I think that what I'm going to say is at least factually accurate. I also am a member of the Task Force on Homelessness that was appointed by the Human Relations Commission of the city, and I was formerly the coordinator of the Peace and Justice Center. I come to speak for myself, but I bring all of this up to call your attention to the fact that there has been an outpouring of people speaking against this ordinance every time that it's come up, starting last July. I hope you were listening to the kind of people that are coming up and speaking to you about it. Many of them are homeless and speaking very eloquently about their problems, but many of us are ordinary people who just feel that our business in life is best directed toward trying to help our brothers and sisters who are having problems rather than to harass them or to drive them out of our vision. Now, one of my besetting sins is that I'm a terrible procrastinator, and from time to time when I procrastinate and don't do something, I excuse it to myself by looking and saying, well, nothing bad happened, so maybe it wasn't necessary that I did it. So I congratulate you. Last July you started on this ordinance and you procrastinated. And did anything disastrous happen? No, nobody fell over anybody. It's been an ephemeral. There is no problem, and yet we're spending an enormous amount of attention about the homeless problem, which is one of the massive problems dividing our society, trying to figure out whether it's sensible or reasonable or constitutional to pass an ordinance that's clearly designed to drive the poorest of the poor off University Avenue so they won't interfere with the tourist business or the restaurant business or cause us any problems in our heart when we walk down the street and see that there are people who really have no place to live. Now, unfortunately, you've procrastinated about everything else, too. For the last 3 years, I haven't seen any changes. 5 more beds for the 150 homeless in 3 years. You appointed a task force. We spent many, many hours coming up with a set of recommendations that's been sitting around for 4 months already. Nothing has been done about it, except for one positive thing. People like David Martin of the Human Relations Commission and Walt London of Urban Ministry pushed through a little plan to hire 8 people for $8 an hour for half-time work. They had a take-home pay of $150, and although a lot of us thought that was so low, it was foolish, we said at least it's a step in the right direction. You spent the $26,000 you had off in some little corner, and when it came Christmas time, you had to scrape up another week so you wouldn't fire those people at Christmas. Instead, they got dropped in the first week in January. 3 of those 8 were offered temporary jobs that may or may not work out. The other 5 I know. These were people that were feeling filled with themselves and finding some hope, and suddenly that job has disappeared. It's time to stop being so parsimonious about what you spend. And the truth is that Palo Alto is. You don't spend a penny out of my property taxes or anybody else's. You divert $60,000 out of a federal grant to the homeless every year. It's a pittance for the amount of work that is necessary. The task force came up with a series of suggestions that are all sensible and easy. What do the homeless need? They need a place to live, a place to sleep at least for the night. How much longer are you going to just sit around and look at that without getting attached to what an ordinary group of 10 citizens recommended to you that you might do? How much more energy are you going to spend trying to decide whether to pass this shameful ordinance that's obviously not needed, and even the supporters say it's for the police to have the power in case they need to use it. There's a law that says if I sit down and obstruct the traffic, you can arrest me already. I've heard people say the police shouldn't be required to use that kind of judgment. Well, they've got to use that kind of judgment. It's not okay to say you cannot sit there. It's totally foolish, and it's going to cost far more than the $20,000 to $50,000 that the city attorney guessed in January it might cost, because there will be a civil disobedience test of it, undoubtedly. It's going to go down to a long court battle. It's going to set up a situation in which the ordinary people feel like we've got to get into politics and vote some of the people out of office that have been on this wrong path. Some of you are not just on the wrong path, it seems to me you're lost out in the swamp. Okay, it's time to get on to the positive thing and forget that ordinance.
My name is Daniel Day. I am one of the many homeless people that this order, or this ordinance, is going to affect. I have a question. Everybody up there, listening, says, mate, it's not going to change anything. We should have to eat. We should have to sleep. We should have to earn money. So all this ordinance is going to do is cause the city $25,000, $50,000that you can better spend someplace else. Because it's not going to change a thing. We're all intelligent people here. Why are we trying to push something that's a waste of time? All these is on paper. They say the police need a tool. What do they need a tool for? They have their training, their education, and the powers to do what they need to do to enforce the laws. This is not a law. This is a BS game someone came up with, because it makes no sense to anybody. Because what you say we can't do, what you say we shouldn't do, is what we need to do to survive in this city, in this country. So all I'm asking you is be intelligent enough to say, the ordinance is wrong. You passed the ordinance against drinking on the street. That was agreeable. You passed the ordinance against panhandling and city parking lots. That was agreeable. Because we all agree to that. But sitting around on the sidewalk, if I'm tired after carrying 60 pounds, 80 pounds on my back all day long, I'm going to sleep. Whether it's on University Avenue, California Avenue, or Emerson or Capitol. Because I have to sleep just like y'all do. And so do the rest of us homicide. So let's use a little common sense. Use the intelligence that God gave us all. Ordinance is no good. It won't work. It never will work. Because if you pass it, you have to enforce it. That's going to cost the city money. That money can be better used someplace else. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Day. Stephen Player. I'm an attorney here in Palo Alto. My offices are on 2600 El Camino Real. I'm here to speak in support of the citywide ban. I think we've gone at every end of the spectrum this evening, and I think we're losing a little bit of sight on what this ordinance really is all about. It's really about an ordinance which is designed to assist in a very limited area of the downtown, the area which your staff and your police have said is the most obstructive, the most dangerous in terms of pedestrian traffic in the entire downtown area. It's there to serve not only the users of the downtown, but all the citizens of the downtown. This is not an ordinance that says it's not safe for certain people and it's safe for other people. This is to provide a safe place for all the users of the downtown, whether homeless, merchants, businessmen, what have you. This is a very limited, focused effort to try to take the first step in giving to your police and your authorities the opportunity to deal with the problems they've come before you and said is a very real problem. Your city attorney has presented a very well-reasoned argument for a cautious approach to an ordinance that he believes will be sustainable in a court of law. This is a case where you are really representing not only the downtown area, but we have an entire community here of very diversified citizens who are concerned about the downtown and concerned about what it takes to come down and what might they might be exposed to when they come to the downtown area. In particular, the elderly which live in the downtown area at Lytton Gardens at to come to use the senior citizens who had trouble with individual talked earlier about the difficulty of mobility, the importance of having a safe place to walk where they are not being faced with an obstruction. This ordinance addresses those kind of issues. It doesn't in any way lessen the commitment of this council or this community to the problems which the homeless have put before you tonight. I don't see anything in the ordinance that says we as a community are less committed to dealing with those kind of problems. That is not an issue that this ordinance addresses. This is a safety issue. This is an issue which is going to lead to a better place for the entire users of the downtown. I'd like to get back and focus on those particular issues. I urge you to consider it, and I urge you to go forward tonight and adopt this ordinance as your staff has recommended. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Player.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Helen Person, and some of you may know me. I'm the manager of Condom and Chrome in downtown Palo Alto, and I see just about everything that goes around downtown because that's the big hub. I've heard a lot of talk tonight, and I'm not going to read anything. I'm just going to tell you a personal experience that I had about 3 or 4 years ago. This is on the record. About 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, a customer comes in and tells me that one of my people has been hit by a truck on Hamilton Avenue picking up the mail. He was very badly injured and subsequently died of his injuries. He was a wonderful man, a senior citizen. It's fired very hard for me. So when the subject of safety comes, I become very, very upset. I have had customers tell me that they can't walk downtown. The toddlers, I would feel bad if a toddler went in front of a car because they had an obstacle. A senior citizen that couldn't walk. And this is not 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. I've been on the street from 5:30 in the morning till, unfortunately, late at night. And I can tell you that after sunset, it is just as busy, if not busier, downtown than it is during the day. And when you cannot see what is going on and the cars are parked, if someone that was slow or small or couldn't see ride, or there's just so many possibilities darting out in front of a car, I guarantee you that something is going to happen. I myself, I'm afraid to go at that light on University when it first turns green because I know that those people are not going to stop for me. I've lived in this community for many years and the traffic is getting worse and there's more people on the street. We live in a community that is vibrant and active, and we are very fortunate that our downtown is a magnet for so many different types of people. I'm not going to discuss anything about anybody, and what socioeconomic level they are on does not matter to me. The safety of everyone here, whether they're homeless, senior, children, I don't care. All I care about is I don't want to have to go out in front of the store and watch one of my employees or one of my customers or one of my friends get hurt. So if this is going to help, then I say let's try it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Person. What's your Dallenbach?
People are
many of us are speaking, trying to defend those of us in our community less fortunate than ourselves, but we're mainly doing it in terms of the difficulty that they themselves will experience if this ordinance is passed, and I think that's right and fine. But I also feel very saddened and upset about this because I myself actually find very real value in the fact that when I walk down the street, one thing I always do is I get organized enough to do the Herb Cain style of dispersion of wealth and make sure I have spare change in my purse that I can easily get to. And I actually value the chance to be able to hand out spare change as I see fit to people. And I usually don't question it too much. I always figure if somebody actually asks the question, I will actually try to respond in an open and honest manner. And if I have some spare change, they can have it. If you ask me for some spare change tonight, I'd probably give you folks spare change. So I came prepared for that. But I find value in having the economic diversity that we still have left in this community. I'm having a much easier time accepting the lower end of that economic diversity than I am at the higher end. I'm seeing this town change. I'm seeing conspicuous consumption on a level that I didn't think I'd ever live to see. I work right near the corner of Kingsley and Cowper, and there is a tent put up over a house that can be built in the middle of wintertime in this town instead of waiting until the end of the rainy season. And that tent costs $50,000, and that's a temporary structure. I have a lot harder time with that than I do of anybody sitting in line on University Avenue. If University Avenue is becoming just a little unwieldy, I would like to say that it's because of the whole ambiance of University Avenue, a place that I try not to go to anymore. Why would I want to? I mean, there's not that much there that I'm interested in. I also think, and I want to get a little more personal here for a second. I was in chambers, I think, the night when you folks discussed, and I was very happy that you decided to give our city attorney a low-cost loan, I think, to help him finance a house because he couldn't afford a house in this town. I think we're lucky to have Ariel as our city attorney. But I am struck that there is something ironic. He's not the only person. There's other people in city government, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I am struck that some of the people here tonight involved in this ordinance can't afford to live here unless they get help. And there are people in our community that can't afford to even live inside. And I don't think that this is any kind of the same spirit. So then it might come back kind of like this, like, well, but with some folks, they work for the city and we get something back. I'm saying I get something back. I get something back from these people that we're saying, I don't know, you get over to the Hamilton Avenue ghetto or go down to the California Avenue ghetto. You know, we want you off university because you're the problem. And I think that that's scapegoating, and I think that's dangerous. I think scapegoating has gone on throughout human history, and I do not think that it is an overstatement to say it's going on. I've read in the paper letters that were unbelievable, that were name-calling about bums and no-goods and riffraff. And I think it's really disgusting, and I think that as leaders in our community, you folks have a place. Whether or not you pass this ordinance, I hope like hell you don't, but if you do, I still think you have a place to speak up and try to speak to, I think, the fear and the marginalization that's taking place in part because of this discussion that's going on. I was really struck. I think the police brought up an example, or maybe somebody from the audience at the last meeting, about some guys walking down the street in university and it's got a little girl, and the little girl got afraid simply because there was a homeless person sitting on the sidewalk and became afraid, and so daddy's way of solving it was going and approaching a policeman, can't you do something about this? And I was reminded of, I have an African-American friend whose father told me that he has been to places in the United States, mainly in the Midwest, where children have become afraid of him simply because of the color of his skin. And it came to mind when I was hearing that story that isn't there a better response to that than going to a policeman? Isn't the better response of taking the child and possibly approaching the homeless person and saying, hi, what's going on? I think for your own credibility and the good of this city, I'm hoping you'll step back from this, step away from it. Thank you.
I'm Paul Gilbert. I live at 785 Barron Avenue. I expect almost every significant thing that can be said about this proposed ordinance has been said.